This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We're talking about events on today's Open for Business, or more like creating and organizing unique live events. Joining us on the show is Ratnakumar Nadarajan. He is the founder of Mojo Projects. Now, some of you who are familiar with Indian or mostly South Indian Tamil music and entertainment might recognize Mojo as the label that brought us concerts like Retro Rahman and Madras and 80s Musical. They also throw the annual Malaysian Independent Live Fusion Festival, which is a pretty big event by itself. Ratna, I think I'll start with the most obvious question here. You spent 18 years with Maxis in the corporate sector, and then you decided to start your own events company, which is Mojo Projects. What was that transition like? Because, you know, events is not exactly an easy job. It's actually an extremely tough thing to pull off. Why pick that career of all things?
Well, having worked in Maxis for 18 years and having had my fair share of working with event organizers. We put up a lot of marketing events and so on across the country. So what we embarked on Mojo Projects was basically a more focused approach on international concerts, specifically doing our own events first, instead of taking on events for other companies and so on. So the transition was in 2016, basically, when I first thought that there was a gap in the local concert industry, especially for the South Indian market. We felt that we could definitely do better as a country. Malaysia was getting, we had a lot of concerts that was actually announced and cancelled and things like that. So we thought that, I think we definitely can do a better job, because coming from a telco perspective, we actually do a lot of rollouts, so to speak, right? And we have a lot of experience managing big projects, cross-functional projects and so on. And we thought, how hard could this be? And I mean, it's actually quite tough when you're really actually doing it. Easy to look at it from the outside. But in 2016, when we made that transition, I actually really left Maxis only 1 year plus ago. But I had a partner who worked on it full-time in 2016. Then basically 2 years later, I joined full-time. So it was a transition, transitional period where I was just, kind of overlooking it on a smaller, spent lesser time on it. And as things grew fast, then I thought, this is the thing for me to do. And I took the leap full-time. I think it was like June last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is the hardest part about that transition? Was it the financing? Was it the resources, the talent?
I think it's a bit of everything. You first have got to have your business plan set up. And of course, on how to finance your projects. And making sure that those projects actually bring in the money to make it a sustainable business. So it's a cycle, actually. And being in the live concert field, what we usually look for is what's the latest talent out there and how to bring in the independent music groups that don't see much action in Malaysia. So we are more focused on that. So, and of course, we also do the flimmy stuff for the mass market. But the main events that we do, such as the Malaysian Independent Live Fusion Festival, which is actually supported by the Tourism Ministry since 2016 and 2017, actually focuses on independent artists. And so I think the focus is important. The tough part is basically getting the right act and make sure that you've got a good marketing plan to ensure that you actually sell those tickets.
So, touching on financing a bit, what kind of financing went into Mojo Projects, like, initially? Was it completely bootstrapped? Were they like external funding? Were there sponsors?
Well, I think it was a mixture of two things. One is bootstrapped by us, and also we had some funding from the MICEP division of the Ministry of Tourism, who actually believed in us when we put forward a proposal back in 2016, I think. Talking about independent South Indian bands and artists that have really good talent but do not perform in Malaysia. And that actually worked. So they did fund us a bit. So that really helped, yeah.
Yeah, I ask because I'm always interested to know how different enterprises secure funding for different kinds of projects. And, as a new entrepreneur in the field with a new company, was it difficult convincing sponsors and funders to back your events, to back your projects?
When you start off, it's a bit tough because sponsors don't know what you're capable of or what kind of events you throw, right?
Mm-hmm.
So after the first year, it kind of gets a bit more, I won't say easy. I think gets more. You get more confident in actually raising funds. Sponsors have more belief in you. You'll be able to show them your product, so to speak. Of course, we are assuming here that you do a really good job in the first year, right?
Yep.
And then sponsors will actually believe, and if they want to associate their brand with you, they will come. And it may not be those huge sponsors, but it'll definitely bring in enough sponsors to actually either, one, give you some cash benefits in terms of to offset your costs, or again, people who actually give you their services instead, right? For example, like makeup artists, transportation providers, even the venue for that matter, right? So this actually helps you, decrease your costs and actually improve your margin.
Okay.
So that really helps, yeah. So don't just look at cash inputs, right?
Still sticking with financing a bit, how much money is usually spent on the average event? Like, how much do you have to fork out?
Well, I mean, when it comes to Mojo projects, it depends on the artist, actually. Yeah, but we have a cap of around, so far our events, we spend close to 400,000 to 500,000 ringgit per
mm-hmm.
event.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is because we use multiple artists. We just don't use, we have never done a single artist event before. So it's always been like 3, 4, 5 people. So really, it's a real value for money for the audience that comes in.
Like an ensemble kind of thing.
Correct. Mm. And usually, and it's very much based on what you call a concept. For example, recently we concluded an event called Retro Rahman.
Mm-hmm.
Retro Rahman talks about the early days of how A.R. Rahman actually started and so-called golden years of his music production. So we brought in people who actually have sung with him and who traveled with him in that journey. And we had like 6 artists in. And last year we did the same one with another 5 artists. So that's where the cost comes in. When you bring in multiple artists and you like to stage a show with... you can do the same show with one artist, but where's the fun in that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When's it safe to say that the event is a success? Like, when's it safe to say that you've made a profit or the event itself is a win?
I think 2 things. You can't look at each event by itself and say that, hey, look, I hit a 5% or 10% profit on this, so it's a success. So what we do is we look at it from a perspective of like running a business, right? So we look at it over a span of a year or 2 years and see, hey, look, how much we have done in terms of collections and versus the cost, of course. And then whether we have actually gotten ahead in terms of branding, that's very important as well. And whether we've actually broke those barriers in terms of having our shows aired on satellite TV, Netflix and so on. So we've got different targets. So we want to build the Mojo brand primarily. So we may not be making the big bucks in terms of for every show, but definitely I think the plan is to build the brand, make it stronger and also diversify into other areas. Like film production, and we have also produced a couple of interesting things lately
mm-hmm.
For the web series market as well.
What is the first event you organized as a new company, as Mojo Projects, and you know, how did that go?
In 2016, we did the conceptually, we proposed this thing called the Malaysian Independent Life Fusion Festival, MILF for short, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the name itself garnered a bit of excitement from people. So MILF basically brought together 5 bands, right? First time ever it's been done. It was spearheaded by the local ensemble called Akasha.
Mm-hmm.
Akasha is actually it's a huge band that's performed even at the World Cup in Brazil and so on. It's a Malaysian ensemble, international musicians. And also 4 other bands from South India, namely from Kerala, from Mumbai, and also from Chennai. So that was held in October 2016, I believe. And I think it was one of those shows with very little filmy content.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, it wasn't a sell-out concert, but it was definitely, the house was pretty full, basically. Yeah. So we did quite well in terms of, I think that put us on the map because after the first event, people actually took notice of Mojo Projects. Yeah.
Right. I'm speaking with Ratna Nadarajan. He is the founder of Mojo Projects, about creating unique events as well as the business behind creative ventures like that. We will be back after the break. BFM 89.9.
Blues, folk, metal. BFM 89.9.
And we're back on Open for Business. I'm Arvind Yuvaraj, and I'm joined today by Ratna Nadarajan. He is the founder of Mojo Projects, and we are talking about the business of events and creative ventures like Retro Rahman and the annual Malaysian Independent Live Fusion Festival. You know, I've always been curious about ticket prices for events like the Malaysian Independent Live Fusion Festival. They change significantly from time to time, from year to year. So I'm wondering, like, how do you price tickets for events like that? Because what influences the price range for these tickets? Because even the tickets for the upcoming event is actually much cheaper than it was back in 2016.
As Mojo Projects gets more prominent in terms of our name in India especially, we get good rates. So things have changed in the sense that it gives us a better position to actually, demand better pricing from the suppliers as well. So that has actually brought prices down. And also the fact that we can actually put in more, the venue also plays a part, right? So if you want to go for more standing seats, standing instead of seats, those kind of configuration also plays a part. And of course, your sponsors. So if you've got enough sponsors to cover certain costs, you may want to pass that on to the customer. So they actually pay less prices for the tickets. So it comes down to that. It comes down to the mechanics of how much you're going to spend for the show and see how much you can pass those savings on to the customers. And I think this one would evolve as you become more experienced in managing your cost as well.
Okay, so you've been in the business for a while now. You've done a few events. Looking back at your first event, what would you have done differently if you had the chance now? Like, knowing what you know now, if you could do it again, what would you have done differently?
I think the first event, what we would have done is we would have priced it better, maybe. Maybe we overestimated the take-up. So I think if you had priced it better, that's one thing. I think secondly, we didn't have a rock zone, so to speak, at that time. People couldn't dance. I think because we had all those independent bands that really rocked the house, and it would have been great to have a proper rock zone where everyone could, those who wanted to dance will dance and stuff.
There was no mosh pit.
There's no mosh pit for the first one. After that, we've had mosh pits for all the bigger ones. We also have done some smaller events in ballrooms. Usually, those are sit down with a pre dinner kind of thing. So that's a bit fun also. That totally attracts a different market. So, yeah. So no mosh pit, better ticket pricing. And, I think those are the two things. There's not much of regret, actually, the first one. We really had fun doing it. And we really learned a lot. And, I mean, not just from what we felt. I think what really impressed us was people actually took note of the smaller things that we did. And they really went back home happy. So that was very important. So every time we do something, we try to think of what will the customer think at the end of the day, or the attendees feel when they actually go back home. Or was it really worth my last 4 hours or 5 hours, you know? Because MILF, or Malaysian Independent Live Fusion Festival, is actually a six-hour event. It's more like a festival with a lot of food and stuff happening, right? So if you want to like spend 6 hours at a venue and don't feel happy end of the day, then it's going to be a problem. You're not going to come back, right?
Because it's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time. And you have a lot of acts. So we have, that's why we line up some exciting acts and things like that. So that'll be interesting to see how this year's one pans out.
Why did Mojo decide to serve this market from the beginning? You know, like is it an underserved demographic? Is it an untapped market? Did you find out that there was demand and not much supply for these events?
I think specifically, we had a few failed events in 2015, 2016 by other organizers. That actually opened our eyes. To be fair, we felt that we had a lot of complaints coming in into the market the first year. Even all the licensing bodies, they were asking us a lot of weird questions like, make sure you get your security right, or make sure you get your ticketing counters right, make sure you have got enough assurers. So, I mean, this, for me, coming from Maxis and coming from an a background of having done a lot of projects, I was like, wow, I mean, this is like basic stuff, right?
101.
So those were lacking. That's when we thought, oh, really, there's a gap here, right? So that's when we tried to fix all those stuff. And it worked, basically. So it was actually getting the basics right and adding a few more creative touches to the thing. People actually don't want to complain. They just want to come there and have a good time. And they don't want to have issues Of course, I mean, being a live event, you can't prevent certain things. For example, sound issues, especially when you're 100% live. We make sure our guys are 100% live. There's no lip syncing, or there's no minus one being played, or there's no tracks being played. So because of that, there could be some technical glitches on and off, maybe some feedback, maybe some sound issues. But that's expected in a live concert, especially in a multi-band kind of a setup, right? Other than that, we don't get much of a complaint. Maybe some guys feel that the prices of the tickets are a bit expensive, and you know, we get those kind of complaints. So definitely manageable, and whatever comes in, we will try to improve ourselves in the next event.
I want to ask you about the whole Malaysia Major Events, or the MME thing. They recently closed down, and then ALIFE, which is the Association of the Arts Live Festivals and Events, they've been super vocal and very vocal about these event cancellations when it comes to international artists. Does this affect or affect Mojo projects in any way? Do you think it will become a problem in the future?
I think definitely there'll be a problem. I think with MME closing, we lack one more avenue to actually voice out our concerns and also to help us with the bigger events, right? So MME, like I said, did support us in 2016 and 2017. So after that, they're no longer around. So that's one thing that's I feel that could be a good thing for the industry if somehow MISAP brings it back, or the Tourism Ministry brings it back, right? That'll definitely help the newcomers to start off, and also people that have got ideas that they want to explore, but they don't have the funds for it. Like, if they didn't believe in us in 2016, I'm not sure whether Mojo would have gone as far as what we have done right now. Although we did have some funding of our own, but it really helped us, because we really wanted to do things that we wanted to bring non-filmy stuff, which is not heard of in Malaysia. Bands like Thai Kudum Bridge and Masala Coffee, I mean, they became popular after we brought them here. And after that, they became very popular in Singapore and Australia and so on. So there is a market for independent music, right? So coming back to MME, yeah, they did a great job, I feel, back when they were active. And I think moving forward, when I referred to the South Indian market of cancellation, I think mostly not those issues, but mostly organizer-related issues. Either they could not sell enough tickets and then they cancel it, or they have got issues with the artist contracts and so on. Yeah, those kind of stuff that shouldn't happen.
Right. I'm speaking with Ratna Natarajan of Mojo Projects, and we need to take a quick break before we go on, but we'll be back to talk about more about Mojo Projects and their experiments with film and television and streaming and online programming when we get back. BFM 89.9.
Blockbusters for me. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for business on BFM 89.9 with Arvind Yuvaraj, and my guest today is Ratna Kumar Natarajan, who is the founder of Mojo Projects. You touched on this slightly just now, and Mojo Projects is slowly moving into film and entertainment. You also have a web series, I think, coming up, like an online docu-series. And you also have like a new Malay horror movie that's on your resume. So why tackle film? Like, why move into the film production scene?
A bit of tradition, actually, because my family has been in the film industry since the 70s. So in my family, actually, we've got a few producers, directors and so on. And actually, we've done around 26 over Malay films. Not Mojo, people in my family, and I've worked with them before, of course. So we thought, what's next for Mojo, right? And we thought that, yeah, look, having done like, what, 7 concerts now and 7 or 8 concerts, so we thought, hey, look, what can we do next? So we did 2 production initiatives this year. One was actually somewhat of a comeback kind of a movie for Era Fazira. And it was fantastic working with her. And it was a horror comedy flick that we are currently actually completing in post-production. And exciting for me to note that we actually fused some of the stuff that we learned from the live music area. We had a very good music composer that's joined us, Rekha Ravindran, who actually did fantastic BGM for the movie. And we actually recorded it in Bulgaria with a 60-member live orchestra. Oh. So it's going to be something different in the Malay movie sector as well. So that's what that's where we try to change the game. It's been recorded in mixed currently in in Ireland. So we're doing the final Dolby 5.1 mix right now as we speak in Chennai. So it's like three countries involved, and of course Malaysia being the fourth country. But why we use the international talent is because we really wanted to bring something different to the market. And the music, I think, is a very key element to any horror movie.
Yes.
And Era's acting, the CGI from our the team that's from Kerala, actually, who've done a lot of horror movies. It's a truly international production, I must say. And I'm quite happy to know that that should come out early next year.
Early next year.
Yeah.
What was the toughest part of getting the film side off the ground? Because was it the competition? Because there is competition in the local market. Or was it, again, back to the, you know, the talent, the financing?
A little bit of both. I think we had to cut short our... we actually sacrificed a couple of things that we wanted to do. We only planned two concerts for this year. Last year, we did four. So we actually took out some funds from our live events side of things. And getting the correct cast, I think, was very important. Talking to Era to come back to do a full movie is one thing. And then, of course, we had the CGI portion of it, where we were not too happy with... so we redid a lot of things, trying to get it right. So those three things, I think, was the real challenge. In terms of what do you call licensing, or in terms of procedure, I think Malaysia is like superb, right? I mean, Finas has got it all down, and I'm really happy when I came out and looked at, you know, the kind of guidelines they have, and the kind of licensing criteria, and, you know, we didn't have any issue, right? Mojo was licensed and ready to go within a month. It wasn't getting our Minister of Finance license was a breeze. Getting our Finas licenses was a breeze. Maybe because we had the background to do it. But I think we are pretty well set up quite impressive compared to the live music area, right?
Scene.
So movies, I think, was a bit more easier to get into. But I think end of the day, what the proof is in the pudding, right? So when the movie launches and see whether you can collect or not. So that's what is going to matter to me, like, end of the day, to see whether how the public reception towards the movie, and whether they really they like what we have put across or not. So that just doesn't become just another horror flick.
Yeah. Branching out from that a bit, was streaming services also a part of the idea when you thought of making movies? Because, you know, stuff like Netflix, because before, when you get into the film scene, you have only like one avenue. So you can only show it in cinemas. And then if someone picks it up, they pick it up. But now you have like Netflix, you have a bunch of other streaming services coming up. iFlix is there. Did you think of that when going to film, going like, okay, if, you know, we have multiple avenues to be successful on?
Sure. I think that's a primary primary reason. I think it's very much in the core of any producer to see where can I sell my product. So basically, what you just mentioned is because what you just mentioned basically means that we've got more marketplace to sell now.
Yes.
So instead of just our local satellite station, we've got the local free TVs, right? Of course, RTM and all, and then we also have iFlix, Netflix, who's I think based out of Singapore, but I think getting quite a lot of Malay movies playing right now. We've got View, which is another channel. So there's a lot of avenues where we can actually go in. And I think the general public's also coming to terms of IPTV and what do you call
on-demand TV,
yep. Where they actually want to download and watch and stuff like that. So 10 years ago when we worked on the IPTV and a demand kind of channel in Maxis, right? We saw the market. We know it's going to go in that direction, but we didn't know how fast or, you know, how slow it's going to be. So I think Astro is doing a good job with the on-demand offerings. So after TV, we'll go into the on-demand side of things. And of course, then the streaming part will come in. You're right. Definitely much more avenue to recoup your money.
What kinds of challenges are you facing at the moment with Mojo?
I think the challenge will continue to be getting the right content, getting the right people to perform for you and to sell those tickets. That'll be your main challenge. And I think in terms of licensing, in terms of getting your organization done, I think we are okay with that. Of course, I think... we feel that, you know, maybe an organization like MME who will be able to iron out some little kinks in what's missing in the current setup will be helpful as well. So, yeah, I think getting the right people to come and perform and getting the right audience in, that will be continuously be our challenge.
Okay, last question before I let you go. What's next for Mojo Projects? Like, what can we expect?
I think next event, I think we have targeted one for November. And it's again the fourth edition of Malaysian Independent Live Fusion Festival. And we've lined up some interesting things. Maybe you'll be able to see one Asian record-breaking feat, 60 minutes, I think 60 songs in 60 minutes on a Veena by Rajesh Vaidya.
Oh, wow.
So that'll be quite exciting, non-stop. Actually, he just got the award presented to him a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll be recreating that here in Malaysia for the first time. So these are things I'm talking about, right? Independent musicians that don't get to perform very much out of India so much. And then we've got a couple of Flimmy people as well. We've got Haricharan and Shweta Mohan with Bennett and the band. So it's actually the bands actually swap. It's like a Woodstock kind of concept.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got like five bands coming in, having a good time. So that's in on November, first week of November.
Ratna, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Right, thank you so much.
Right, I've been speaking with Ratna Nadarajan of Mojo Projects about creative ventures and the business behind organizing them. This interview is also available for streaming via podcast on the BFM website, which is bfm.my, the BFM app, and we are also on Spotify, the podcast section. Go check us out. This has been Arvind Yuvaraj on Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.